welcome to Bunta Vista. I am Ben, and this is another installment of the Theo Files. I am here in my apartment experiencing Brisbane's second coronavirus lockdown. With me is Theo, who is in his house experiencing Brisbane's second coronavirus lockdown.
Hey.
Hey.
So what you up to over there?
Nothing.
You got anything going on?
I haven't left bed yet. It's 1:45 in the afternoon, and I've been just sort of... I woke up very early. I've been awake since, I'm going to say, 6:37.
That's early.
Just sort of looked at my phone for a bit, and I was like,
well, time to jack off.
Yep. I had 7 to 8 masturbation sessions. I'm now exhausted. I got my laptop, did some work, and now I'm here. I was thinking about having a sandwich, but then I don't have... I was just saying to you before, I don't have cheese, and it just seems like that would... Seems kind of pointless, so...
The possibilities are... Well, I won't say they're endless, because...
No.
Several. The possibilities are several.
The possibilities are limited, because I'm not really... I'm probably not going to leave my apartment, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, we can... You're allowed to stay within the confines of your neighborhood if you wear a mask. And George bought me a mask, which is very nice. So I've got one, but I'm not going to go outside, I think.
No, I'm also here in my house and considering going outside and going, well, I don't think I'm going to go outside. I'm thinking I'm going to stay in my house where I am now.
Yeah.
And where I'll be tomorrow.
You know what one of my favorite things about my new apartment is? There is no one with the UK strain of the coronavirus in it.
That you know of.
I mean, I don't really have like a crawl space or anything, but there are some cupboards that are kind of high and hard for me to get into.
You have to leave yourself open to surprise, I think, in living your life.
That's true. I mean...
And any number of us could have the extra contagious UK strain of the novel coronavirus.
60 to 70% more contagious, I believe.
Now those numbers are really getting those numbers up.
It's already the vanilla boring novel coronavirus. Yeah. It's already too contagious for my taste.
Yeah, where we sort of went, well, this is probably a little too contagious.
Let's shut down society. Oh, yeah. Oh, you've got another one there, and it's
less or more, would you say? Oh.
Oh shit. so hopefully that I would hate for that to become a thing.
Yeah. In 2021, I feel like we left that in 2020. That's like...
Coronavirus?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's old news. Well, I think...
It is old news.
The US just surpassed 4,000 daily deaths for the first time.
Okay. Well, yeah. Old news for us here in
the
society.
The UK is on a like very sharp upwards trajectory as well. But we're leaving the vibe of coronavirus in 2020. I'm simply not devoting mental energy to it. For those of you who aren't following closely with Brisbane news, maybe, which is odd, but...
Yeah, there's really not that much to keep up with.
No, the
I
one
feel like
thing
you
that's...
could integrate it into your day quite easily.
If you maybe just have like a Google alert for Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Yeah, you'll probably learn all sorts of stuff about proposed bridges.
Yeah, there's some good ones going in. Yeah, absolutely. We've got a little footbridge going in from South Bank to the new Queen's Casino. Queen's Casino?
Whatever. It's the Queen's Plaza, is that what they're calling it? I don't know.
And that's going to be in the news a lot, I think.
And I think there's a proposed footbridge, I believe, is it from near where the regatta is? Off Coro? I don't know if that one's actually going ahead or not, but I'd love to have that one.
Oh, sort of across to where those little markets go.
Yes.
At West End.
Davies Markets.
God, there's just so much happening in the town of Brisbane, Queensland.
But we're also
you know what else is happening?
because we identified one case of the UK strain of the coronavirus in a cleaner at a quarantine hotel, and now they've gone... Well, gosh.
Yeah.
First
of all, you're going to have to miss me with that. And then, secondly...
Miss me with that UK strain of coronavirus shit, please. So, we're going into a 3-day hard lockdown that... I don't know about you, but I was a bit surprised. I woke up yesterday morning sort of looking at the news being like, wow, what's happening in America? And then scrolled past some... Blue check ABC employee saying Greater Brisbane is now in a 3-day
I love news.
Lockdown.
I would hate for it to happen to me.
I just, yeah, odd, bit of a surprise.
RIP to Donald Trump as well.
He died.
Jack Dorsey took him out the back, shot him with an extremely old-timey rifle, sort of a blunderbuss sort of thing. He's gone, as far as I know, or he can't post anymore.
And only like 2 days after Andrew had very boldly done a tweet saying they will never take him off the website.
Andrew's such a dumb bitch.
It's sort of like a Lathe of Heaven scenario, except instead of his dreams or whatever, it's just if Andrew says something, the opposite will happen.
Sort of like Cassandra, if Cassandra was screaming, nothing bad will happen.
Hey, no, I was going to say, my segue here was going to be, do you want to learn about something bad that happened? But I don't know if I can say, I guess it is bad, but it's not. It's certainly better than catching the UK strain of the novel coronavirus. Theo, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Have you done that?
Yes. Yeah.
And I want you to picture the United States in May of 1969.
Mm. The summer of love.
Except I... yep, that's it.
Mm-hmm. We got it. All right, I'm glad.
America is deep, deep in the grip of the space race. Mm-hmm. The Russians have already beat them to landing a probe on the moon. They beat them to the first man in space. They beat them to the first lady in space. Mm-hmm.
They beat them to the first dog in space,
They
believe.
Certainly did. They beat them to the first murder. they got the first space walk, and they got the first satellite up there. So Russia's, I think they got the first two people in space as well. Like, I think they just kind of beat them on just about
everything. Running train on the US at the moment. Yeah,
absolutely. A guy in a big fur hat is just pointing at them and laughing, basically on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. So we're running out of things to do in space right now. We've done almost everything.
We got the first nude man in space. The first nude lady in space. The first Orbital 69. So the Americans at this point are saying, holy fuck, we look like dipshits. We have got to do something to stop those Ruskies from humiliating us.
Yep. So they are making us appear to be absolute clowns in space. And space
doing
clowns.
It with communism, no less.
Which also Russia set the record for first off, space clown.
And first space communism. Mm-hmm. So America's got to do something, right? And they have thought, all right, there is one first left to us that we reckon we can possibly get if we divert all of NASA's attention and money to it. If we save them from some brutal tax cuts that were happening to like every other government department in the early 60s, we can maybe get a man on the moon. So to do this... required the rapid development of a bunch of new technologies without really a lot of time to test them. So in the late 60s, they did a bunch of extremely expensive missions, the Apollo missions, those Apollo missions that took place in the late 60s, were all about testing readiness for going to the moon. You know, they would do longer orbits or they would bring up more equipment just to see whether they could do it, how it would work. And this eventually culminated in Apollo 10. So Apollo 10 is the mission before the moon landing. This was their, like a feasibility test. They had all of the equipment that the Apollo 11 people would have. They did basically every single thing that would happen during Apollo 11.
They've worked out whether or not it's a good idea to fill the entire spacecraft with just oxygen. Ticked that one off.
They got back down after that mission. They looked at the bodies. They thought, you know what? We're going to put about 70% nitrogen in there.
Yep. I think nature argon. Got this right the first time around. You know
what? This way super less flammable. Mix is not
Holy
great.
Shit.
And of course, because they're all smoking on those missions as well.
It's super high from the oxygen, flicking their ash directly into the controls.
Everyone's just blinded constantly by cigarette ash. Well, there's no way we can stop doing this. I might have mentioned this on the podcast, but ages ago I was watching a bunch of just like archival footage and documentary stuff on very early wet domes, underwater habitats from like the 60s and 70s. And there was a... who's that? The French bastard who loved to dive.
Oh, Jean-Jacques Cousteau?
Cousteau, certainly. So in one of his documentaries, they're looking at this very early underwater habitat, which people were living in for weeks. And, like, there's a bit where a guy in a wetsuit emerges, like, he's been swimming from somewhere, and he goes up into the sort of airlock thing, comes up, still in his wetsuit, and, like, immediately sits down, lights a cigarette, starts drinking a glass of wine. It's
incredible. Okay, we want you to just reproduce, act like you're at home. You've just come home from work, you've just walked in the... You've got a suit on, that suit may or may not be wet. Everything else is the same. Just do as you would do.
It's just so beautiful. The French can't help
but... taking my cigarette.
We need you to be in the best possible condition you can possibly be. A cigarette visibly hanging out of your mouth.
Now, do you have enough cigarettes?
We had to get a few cheap bottles because the wine list you gave us was very expensive. Cancel submission. Where are we? We're in orbit, right? We get up there. It's Apollo 10. They've got everything. They're highly trained, incredible astronauts, and their goal is to get into the descent orbit that Apollo 11 would get into and, like, get to the point without actually going to the descent. So this mission...
Yeah, so they're sort of edging the moon landing.
It's a dry run. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're sort of dry orbiting the moon, if you will. There'll be no penetration of the moon's atmosphere.
Right. Tenuous as it may be.
Yes, thin. Thin atmosphere. It's so close to the actual mission that they're worried that the astronauts might just go for it. to the extent that NASA's engineering team, or the Apollo engineering team, made sure that the ascent module of the lunar lander doesn't have enough fuel in it to get them off the moon. God.
They just tape over the descend button. Do not press.
No, don't do it. So the whole thing is they had all these meetings just being like, all right, these guys probably really want to be the first people on the moon, but they know that they won't be. But they have the opportunity.
They're really going to want to be there, down there.
Yeah. They're like 15.6 kilometers above the surface of the moon. And they're like, we just have to drop a little bit, and then we're there.
I just want to land on that dry bastard.
I want to land on the moon so bad, man. There's three of them crowded around the porthole.
Hey, have you thought about how good it would be to land on that motherfucker?
What are they going to do? They're going to fucking tell a guy named Buzz he gets to do it? No, this is my time. This is my time to shine. And mostly, right, that doesn't happen. They don't... They didn't surprise land on the moon, or at least if they did, NASA covered it up very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the first thing they did in Apollo 11, is get out there with some shovels.
Bury the bodies of the astronauts that were stuck there from the unsuccessful last one. Oh, it looks like we're losing reception. Quick, turn the cameras off. We got some bodies to bury real quick. Most of this mission is a success, right? It goes without a hitch. There are, like, a few weird things that happen. Mm-hmm.
They extremely successfully did not land on the moon.
Yeah, of all the people that have not landed on the moon, they have not landed on the moon more than anyone else.
And that took about $4 billion for them to
probably
not land on the moon.
Actually, I think probably the only person who has not landed on the moon the most is probably the third guy that was on Apollo 11.
Collins.
Collins? What's his name, Collins? Don't even know what his first name is. Never going to bother learning it.
I'm just going to be up here, guys, if you're... you want to come back soon, or are you still having fun down there on the surface of the moon?
Imagine if you had, like, some sort of, like, reunion dinner or something. Just the three of the astronauts from Apollo 11 hanging out, and, like, you're at a restaurant, and the waiter is like, oh, my God. Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong,
two
and the friend
you
you're having dinner with. Oh, brutal. That'd sit with you for life, right? Like, surely that comparison would undermine the enormity of the, like, achievement 100%. And the importance of what you did. Oh. So they don't land on the moon. What does happen, though, on the fourth day of the mission, is at some point, the lunar module pilot, Eugene Cernan, just posted a photo of him to Twitter holding a You'd have to see it. I can't describe it. He tells Mission Control that he can hear a sort of outer spacey music. He then clarifies by saying outer space type music. He hears outer space type music in his headset. And the other astronauts can hear it as well. But Mission Control can't hear it. And then that's the end of that incident. That's it. That's the whole thing that happens. They're like, ooh, that's a bit weird, a bit haunting, isn't it? And then they just stop. Someone at some point says, well, I can't imagine anyone's out there, and then that's it.
I'm assuming, because that's going straight into their headset. We have no recording of... them reacting to the music.
I think we do have a recording of it, actually. I was trying to find it, but the link I went down was dead, and then I didn't bother looking for another one. Maybe I'll put it in post right here.
Hey, when do we fire the helium tanks?
Not yet, babe. Yeah.
You want some more brownies?
No.
First, today's a little hungry.
That music even sounds outer spacey, doesn't it? You hear that? That whistling sound?
Yeah.
Woo! Patriots. Yeah, it sounds like, outer space type music. Hey, Tom, is your insulation all burned off here on the front side of your window over here? Right?
Yeah.
Mine's all burned off. Heading out here, weary, John?
And let's all find out whether or not I did that.
Hmm. Truly haunting, or silence.
Or there's absolutely
there was
nothing
17 minutes of silence there, so...
Yeah, or it might be Scar. Who knows? I could have put anything there. The theory is it was probably just radio interference that happened to make beautiful, unearthly music. Hard to say. There's another incident on... I think maybe the first day of the mission, where because they're putting commands into the computer of the module, and one of them accidentally puts the same command in twice, which puts the lander into the wrong mode, and then all of a sudden it starts spinning like crazy. So they do they do 8 rotations in it.
They helicopter grandma'd the Apollo 10 mission.
I accidentally helicopter grandma'd the lunar lander. Very embarrassing. And then they get it under control, and that's fine. Apparently, NASA made a big effort to downplay how bad that was. They reckon that like 2 or 3 more spins would have completely derailed the mission and probably killed them. But NASA was just like, just space stuff. That'll happen. But that's not... Neither of those are the most important incident of what happened on Apollo 10. I'm going to read some transcripts to you here. Now, I'm not going to identify which lines are coming from which member of the crew. So, the crew is Commander Thomas P. Stafford, Command Module Pilot John W. Young, and Lunar Module Pilot Eugene A. Cernan. I'm not going to be attributing what lines are to whom, because they're all basically the same guy and it doesn't really matter. And also, that would be very tedious. But here we go. So, this is a conversation that broke out at the 13-hour-and-29-minute mark of the 6th day of the mission. It begins as thus. Oh, who did it?
I know immediately the incident you're discussing here.
Who did what? What? Who did it? Where did that come from? Give me a napkin quick. There's a turd floating through the air. I didn't do it. It ain't one of mine. I don't think it's one of mine. Mine was a little more sticky than that. Throw that away.
That doesn't meet my quality standards.
Hey, whoa, that's not that nearly sticky enough. God Almighty. Laughter from Mission Control. What do you see? Nothing. That's enough for me. Yes. Nice going there. No more turds are going to fit in there.
What?
Is that waste compartment full? No, hell, there's nothing in there. It goes all the way down to the cut off by the sound of mission control laughing. Hell, when I got in there, I had to stick my hand in there and he put that in the bag, didn't he? You guys been trying to stick it through there with your fingers? So that is the
mistakes
end
of, were made.
That's the end of turd discussion in the transcript for 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, the lunar module pilot, Eugene Cernan, is saying, they said on 135, they told us that, wait, here's another goddamn turd. What's the matter with you guys? Here, give me a cut off by the sound of the other two astronauts laughing. Well, babe, if that was me, I would sure know I was shitting on the floor. It was just floating around? Yes. Mine was stickier than that.
Very insistent on this point.
But apparently,
I couldn't possibly make my turd. My turds are extremely sticky.
Mine was too. It hit that bag. Cut off. When I stuck my finger in mine, mine was too soft. God dang. So, that line in particular, is he saying it's mine was too soft to have been the one that was floating around, or just a general comment on the quality of his turds?
On the quality of his turds. That's the way I've read it.
Do you think they had to check them just to see that their, you know, gut biome was all functioning and everything?
I think like 8 months of their training is just, okay, Jim, so you're going to have, when you get up there, you're going to have to poke your turds.
Oh, they're like, they're blindfolded and they have to still be able to put it on the Bristol stool chart.
I can't it's a just Frank
six,
Reynolds
it's a seven. Oh. Apparently their diets are like everything about their diet is super heavily monitored. There was like a bit of a scandal with one of the Skylab missions, Skylab 4.
Oh, he
4.
Took up a sandwich?
No, I haven't heard about that one.
Fuck, I feel like it's in Apollo 8 or something. They were supposed to be on Apollo 11, but the crew was shifted off because one of them took up a sandwich with them.
That's incredible.
Oh, I'll try and find that.
That better be a good fucking sandwich. Like, if you're just bringing up, like, a peanut butter sandwich, awful. If you're bringing up a Reuben, well, now we're talking. What's that you got there? Is that a Cubano? Did you smuggle a Cubano on Apollo 8?
Well, you tell your story. I can tell you exactly what kind of sandwich it is after that.
So on, I think, Skylab 4... one of the guys was eating, like, on, like, the first day or something, they were up there or on their way up there. One of the guys was eating one of their, like, packets of stewed tomatoes, which is fucking gross. And he ended up throwing part of it up. It made him a bit sick. Mm. And they conspired to keep that fact secret from mission control.
Yeah, there's a bit of that goes on.
Because they were like, well, they'll make a whole fucking deal out of it. We'll have to do stuff with all the food. It'll set us back. It'll just be a pain in the ass. It's not worth the effort. So they lied and said that he wasn't hungry and couldn't finish all his food. But what they didn't realize was that they were being recorded the whole time. So, like, the next day, when the transcripts were typed up for everyone to review, all the mission control people were like, okay, this is, like, the first day of the mission. You've just lied
to
us.
What happened yesterday?
Hey, you feeling okay, buddy?
Doing all right. Anything upset in your tum-tum?
So that was the same mission that had the... Well, apparently it's quite debated whether or not they would call it a strike, but it was when supposedly the three astronauts aboard Skylab, during Skylab 4, switched their radio off for an hour and a half because they were fucking sick of... how much work they were doing at the time.
Yeah.
And then they...
Sick
sort
of the bullshit.
They were sick of the drama at work. Apparently, this is what... One of the big changes that NASA made for the rest of that mission is that instead of giving them a, like, minute-by-minute schedule, which is what they had before, they had a shopping list style of tasks to do during the day that they could do sort of in the order they felt like when they felt like doing it, which apparently improved their quality of life quite a lot. They ended up getting everything done, even though they were behind schedule by the halfway point. And that's why you should organize in your workplace.
All right. So, and here's the sandwich thing. So John Young is famous for his Apollo 16 moonwalks and his role as commander of the first space shuttle mission. He's also remembered for a small scandal he triggered with a sneaky act, smuggling a corned beef sandwich into space. Okay. There you go.
I'm not mad about that.
No, that's a good sandwich. We're talking a versatile maybe sandwich.
Corned beef with a little bit of relish on
well,
there, maybe?
Well, we'll get into that, I think. The corned beef sandwich sparked a brief conversation between Young and Grissom. So this is on Gemini 3. What is it? Grissom asked. Corned beef sandwich, Young replied. Where'd that come from? Grissom asked. Answered Young, I brought it with me. Let's see how it tastes. Smells, doesn't it? So he tasted the sandwich, but quickly announced he would stick it back in his pocket because it was starting to break up. Young suggested the sandwich was a thought, not a very good one, replied Grissom. Pretty good, though, if it would just hold together. So this sparked a review by the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Appropriations, in which one member of Congress called it a $30 million sandwich. And politicians cited safety concerns about crumbs interfering with spacecraft operations. A frequently cited quote from that meeting comes from George Mueller, then NASA's associate administrator for manned spaceflight, quote, we have taken steps to prevent the reoccurrence of corned beef sandwiches in future flights.
Do you reckon that's maybe just like on the banned foods list for the ISS now?
Oh, no, 100% is. So they go, we've got this here, sorry. Today, astronauts commonly make their own sandwiches and even pizzas on the International Space Station, but they use tortilla bread to reduce crumbs.
Oh, that's smart. Corned beef is probably fine, though, right?
I think so. Yeah, corned beef was not the problem. You can just keep you can just bring a whole pocket full of corned beef up there. They don't have any issue with that whatsoever. Got to pick your battles.
Did you see that thing from the other day where it was something about one of the guys in the ISS having a gorilla costume sent up somehow? Surprising the other people on the ISS with it? I didn't really look into this, but like, I was just still of the mind that we were at the point with spaceflight that something as frivolous as a gorilla costume getting into space is still just like not worth the money.
Yeah, prohibitively expensive. It's $100,000 to take that up there.
For his birthday, U.S. astronaut Scott Kelly was given a gorilla suit and decided to have some fun with it on the International Space Station.
That rules. There's such a good bit.
Oh, I mean, you'd kind of hope that like none of the astronauts had seen Ad Astra. We're just like, oh my god, we're on the baboon one. Oh, fuck. Oh, this is back in 2016, actually. Good lord. Very strange. The transcript continues as thus. This is from the lunar module pilot. I don't know whose that is. I can neither claim it nor disclaim it. What the hell is going on here? I don't know. That's what I was up against when, after Tom stuck his in there, I figured, Jesus, how? Something wrong there. We're going to have to get all that crap out. It's supposed to get cleaned back over that there. And that ends the third conversation of Apollo 10.
See, this is why they sent up Apollo 10. Otherwise, Apollo 11, they'd be,
they have the turd cage on Apollo 10.
Yeah, they've got the whole, like, fuel indicator thing, the code when the processor had too many jobs on it, and then suddenly they're dealing with a turd problem. You just want to really get the turd problems out of the way early.
So no one has gone on record since then. None of those three astronauts. And said, just quietly, that was my turd.
That was my turd.
Like, what are the possible situations here? One is that turd containment was breached and a whole turd just sort of slipped free. Or one of the astronauts was like, fuck, I got shit so bad.
I got a shit.
We're in the middle of doing some space stuff, though, so I'm just going to open the little bum flap that I assume is on their spacesuits.
It's like being in the ocean.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Until it's just floating around.
Yeah, and then everyone's like, who's that? Whose turd is that? Theo, is that your turd?
Do you reckon they did like a turd line up the next day?
So on and so forth. Oh, absolutely. I think just one. Because the nice thing is they don't have to like touch it or anything. It can just be floating there in space. So sort of, you know, floating all in a big line there.
Yeah, what if they just like just sort of use their breath or whatever to get it into a perfectly stationary floating position?
Mm-hmm.
No movement whatsoever. They're just like, hey, don't go into that corner because that's where the turd is.
It's the turd corner.
It's just sitting there.
We've just put the turd with the rest of the turds.
So if we get enough of them together, they'll generate their own sort of turd gravity that will suck the other turds in. So, you've got something for me.
Thank you, Ben.
Is it turd related?
It is not turd related, Ben. You'll be either happy or displeased to know.
I will not reveal which way I'm feeling about it.
Ben, do you believe that love can blossom on the battlefield?
I believe in the enduring power of love and that it can blossom anywhere.
Oh, that's beautiful. Hmm. Anyway, in legal history, an animal trial was the criminal trial of a non-human animal. Such trials are recorded as having taken place in Europe from 13th century until the 18th.
What
the fuck? Uh-huh. So, this article, I'm going to kick off with an article because I think it gives some lovely background here. So, this is from law, folklore, and animal law. Really getting the... And there's two different kinds of law in there, so don't get confused. By Esther Cohen, published in 1986. So, several European legal levels were involved in trials of animals. They were held before royal, urban, seigneurial, which I believe is like an early kind of feudalism, but please don't quote me on that, and ecclesiastical courts, so of course, religious courts. Nevertheless, they followed only two distinct procedures, secular and ecclesiastical. While the former type was used to penalize domestic beasts that had mortally injured a human being, the latter was employed to rid the population of natural pests that could not be individually punished. The two types were clearly distinct in form and development and therefore require separate description, which we will do. they kick off with an amazing and horrific example. By the way, I forgot, this is a content warning for violence, cruelty, both by and to animals, animal trials, animal justice. So, anyway, out of the way.
Not justice for animals, though,
no,
in the
this
sense
is
of...
being applied to them.
Uh-huh, yeah.
In December 1457, the sow of Jehan Bailey of Savigny and her six piglets were caught in the act of killing the five-year-old Jehan Martin, which, horrible, by the way. Pigs are terrifying.
Yeah.
All seven pigs were imprisoned for murder and brought to trial a month later before the seigneurial justice of Savigny. Besides the judge, the protocol recorded the presence at the trial of one lawyer, brackets function unspecified, two prosecutors, brackets, one of them a lawyer and a counselor of the Duke of Burgundy, eight witnesses by name, quote, and several other witnesses summoned and requested for this cause. Though the owner was formerly the defendant, it is clear from the proceedings that he stood accused only of negligence and was in no danger of any personal punishment. Moreover, he was allowed to argue in court, quote, concerning the punishment and just execution that should be inflicted upon said sow, end quote, if he could give any reason why the sow should be spared. The owner having waived this right, the prosecutor requested a death sentence.
this is ridiculous. This is a fucking Monty Python sketch.
This is the least ridiculous part of this whole thing. So we're just getting started. The judge, having heard all of the relevant testimony and consulted with wise men knowledgeable in local law, ruled.
Spelling of law is that one?
That is L-A-W, but of course that could go both ways. Ruled, according to the custom of Burgundy, that the sow should be forfeit to the justice of Savigny for the purpose of hanging by her hind legs on a suitable tree. The piglets created a more difficult problem, as there was no proof that they had actually bitten the child, though they were found blood-stained. They were therefore remanded to the custody of their owner, who was required to vouch for their future behaviour and produce them for trial should new evidence come to light. When the latter refused to give such a guarantee, the piglets were declared forfeit to the Lord's justice, though they suffered no further punishment. Well, we got nothing on you guys. You're free to go. And they just open that little section in front of the defendants in the court.
They were ushered into a cab, put on their sunglasses, ignored the press, got out of there.
Got straight out of there.
Oh.
And the court brought from Chalon-sur-Saône a professional hangman who carried out the execution according to the judge's specific instructions. Now, this is, as far as we know, the earliest record of an animal trial on record.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, Ben, you were...
Oh, I mean, sorry, my quibble there was that, I mean, I traditionally think of a hangman as having sort of one job in the manner in which they hang things. You know, like you put a noose around something's neck and then you hang it. This was hung by its feet? By its trotters?
So first of all, hangmen are T-shaped employees. So they've got a lot of depth on the one thing.
Yeah, certainly true.
But you've got to leave yourself open to hanging up pigs. You might be strapping a horse's head to a pike, so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you're gonna lose out on those contracts.
That's true.
And it might be done by a non-expert.
And you don't want that.
No, the whole thing falls over within the month. It's terrible. The case of the sow of Savigny is typical in many respects of most secular animal trials. So, completely ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
In the first place, it was held in Burgundy, one of the earliest areas to record such cases. Animal trials were first mentioned during the 13th century in northern and eastern France, where they spread to the Low Countries, to Germany and Italy. The defendant's porcine nature also recurred in a great many trials. Pigs, who seem to have accounted for the deaths of many unattended infants, again, pigs are horrifying. Don't go near them.
Your child around a pig.
No, were the most common culprits, but there are also records of homicidal oxen, cows, horses, and dogs. Most of all, the trial is typical in its painstaking insistence upon the observance of legal custom and proper judicial procedure. So we've really gone backwards in this, I feel.
Yeah,
in some way.
We wouldn't really take the time of day with it. Like, there wasn't... Yeah, we'd just sort of be like, hey, probably going to put this pig down now.
Yep. Mm, and that's that.
Yeah.
No sense of justice.
No.
Whereas they say this was neither a vindictive lynching nor the extermination of a dangerous beast. Other records mention, in addition to pre-trial imprisonment, the granting of remissions to wrongly accused beasts, the burning in effigy of a, quote, contumacious animal.
How's that spelled?
C-O-N-T-U-M-A-C-I-O-U-S. And I was going to look this up, but then I thought, you know what? My imagination do a much better job.
And I suggest everyone take that approach.
Yep. And the public display of an executed cow's head. The history of ecclesiastical trials is less clear-cut. These cases differed in procedure as little as possible from human trials. So good. Though considered criminal, they were initiated by accusatory procedure, whereby the people of the affected diocese sued their natural scourges before the episcopal court. Prior to holding any proceedings, bishops usually insisted upon public penitence, almsgiving, and the payment of due tithes as the best remedies for any natural heaven-sent scourge. So, we're going to put this animal on trial, or a scourge, a bunch of bees, whatever. It's going to take a bunch of time. Rest assured that there will be no consequences at the end of this, and also give us some money. Please.
Sounds great.
Sounds good. Subsequently, the court, viewing insensate creatures as the equivalent of vulnerable minors, appointed an advocate for the defense. Thus, when in 1587 the syndics of the commune of Saint Julien de Marianne sued the flies that were destroying their vineyards, the bishop's official promptly appointed a lawyer at a modest salary, lest the animals against whom the action lies remain defenseless.
That is incredible.
Hey, we can't have huge swarms of pestilent flies being defenseless in the court of God's law.
What are they going to do? Represent themselves? Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Anyway, we're going to appoint a lawyer at a modest salary who's going to take his job very seriously. And they do. The arguments between the lawyers on both sides, duly presented in writing, considered and rebutted, cover a wide range of issues. In this specific case, they centered around two questions. The possibility of excommunication of animals by a human court, since this was the penalty the plaintiffs requested.
I mean, is the implication that they're already in the fold of the church?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Hey, flies, you're never going to see the inside of this church again.
You've been cut off from the kind graces of the Pope.
Cast out from God's eyes. And the survival rights of both man and animal in nature. Other cases raised the even more basic issue of the very jurisdiction held by any human judge over animals, but this point was invariably resolved in favor of the court, which being ecclesiastical, drew its authority from the universal validity of canon law. You might be asking, can we put animals on trial? But trust me, we've already settled that one. We will. This is animal trial, baby. The same argument also answered the problem of excommunication, but the right to survival was more problematic. The St. Julian plaintiffs argued that animals existed solely for the utility of man and should be punished if they acted contrary to his interests, while the defense countered that God had created animals, the enjoyment of nature, even before the very creation of man. The later argument was unanswerable enough to make the commune offer the flies... offer the flies an alternative in the form of a piece of land away from the vineyards, but well provided with water and vegetation. Really, really going the Reformation sort of path of justice here.
How do you reckon you would corral flies?
Do they have them all gathered here in a box? They get to the end of the trial and the judge goes, doof, doof, not guilty by reason of flies, and they open the box up and they're all just dead. Did you put a hole in the box or?
He just died of old age. It was a 3-day trial.
We sentence you to life in prison served. It should be emphasized, however, that there was no pretense of a reasonable settlement with the insects, so we're not being ridiculous here. Rather, the underlying idea was that if the verdict was accepted, the church could enforce such an arrangement. The insensate character of the insects was in no doubt, but the effort...
What an extraordinary sentence.
Look,
the insensate nature of the insects was in no doubt.
I think we could all agree upon that. But the ever-recurring insistence upon proper procedure and due justice created an impression of anthropomorphism. Thus, when the rats of Orton failed to appear in court in response to a formal summons, their advocate pleaded his client's fear of cats as an excuse, demanding a safe conduct for the accused.
Oh, so they're having fun with it. They're having a good time.
They are occasionally taking the piss and occasionally just... stringing a sow up by its legs to a tree. So, really all over the place here. Bartholomew Chassinet, the guy in June, had his plea quoted back to him as a supreme example of most thoroughgoing justice. A court that saw itself as possessing the God-given right to try all living creatures, human and otherwise, had to grant all of them justice. So, that's sort of the start and how these trials went on. Most of the history that we have on it is from Europe, typically in France and England, typically going from the 13th century onto the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a few trials here to go through. If the court will allow it.
I'll allow it, but this better be going somewhere, counselor.
It's highly unorthodox, but just
I
this
want to
one
see
time,
where this is going.
Just this four times. So this is from Nature on Trial, The Case of the Rooster That Laid an Egg by E.V. Walter. Mm-hmm. In 1474, a chicken passing for a rooster...
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I would. Do they just not know what a chicken looks like?
I mean, or maybe it, what if it was just a particularly like interesting looking chicken?
Yeah, also, a particularly flappy chicken got a lot of the flaps going on.
Are we saying that the nomenclature here is the same as like cow rules? That a cow, so the animal is cattle. Females are cows and the males are bulls.
I believe so.
So chickens is not the term we're using.
A rooster is not a chicken. In the Venn diagram, they appear to be separate.
That is new information to me, if that be the case.
And it appears to be. So a chicken passing for a rooster laid an egg and was prosecuted by law in the city of Basel. Now, we are inclined to dismiss this event as foul play.
Mm.
But in those days, lusus naturae was no joke. The animal was sentenced for a solemn judicial proceeding and condemned to be burned alive for the heinous and unnatural crime of laying an egg. Yeah, I think we're going to have to...
Oh, no.
I think we're going to have to burn this burn this rooster alive.
This chicken...
Look, this rooster. Probably have to
burn this cock.
Cleanse it. Yeah, cleanse it of evil. Chuck some bound up herbal remedy in there. Some sage, I think.
Yeah, smudge some that bad boy.
Crumbs in there. Some healing oils.
Maybe a little bit of lemon juice. Just a little bit of garlic, maybe.
Now we've got some justice going on.
Mm-hmm.
The execution took place, quote, with as great solemnity as would have been observed in consigning a heretic to the flames, and was witnessed by an immense crowd of townsmen and peasants. Hey, you got to get down here.
These motherfuckers are burning a chicken.
They're burning a rooster.
Put down that illuminated manuscript you're working on or fucking whatever. Gotta go check out this chicken burning.
The same kind of prosecution took place in Switzerland again as late as 1730, and they don't go on that. So, okay. In the case of the rooster of Basel, the executioner found 3 more eggs in him, according to a chronicle of the city, hard-boiled at that stage.
Oh, no.
A recent historian, E.P. Evans, who a lot of this stuff comes from, by the way, and there's a little bit of... So if you go on Wikipedia, quite a lot of the stuff is from E.P. Evans, and a good friend of the show, Josie, who sent me the original story, also sent me another one, which sort of was analysis of E.P. Evans's sort of claims, and there aren't a lot of primary sources going on with a lot of this stuff. So take everything here with a grain of salt, and
which I believe is how they also had that chicken.
But we're going to pretend like it's all real, like we always do on the show.
Yep.
And then if it's found out to be not real, we're never going to mention again, because why would you say we were wrong?
We're just not that sort of podcast.
Absolutely not. We're not interested in being better or informative.
I mean, we're no funny, New York Times in that we've never let someone lie about ISIS on
the
podcast for 6 months.
No, we are proud to be a podcast that has never allowed Brett Stevens on.
That's true. Never replied to my emails.
No. I'm sorry. A recent historical E.P. Evans reporting case refused to believe that part of the chronicle, referring to the three eggs, declaring it absurd. Up until now.
Very normal.
Extremely normal. All of the incidences.
What did it say? Three eggs?
Just a logical proceeding. Three eggs in a rooster. Not on. Regarding the event as not as a freak of nature, but as the freak of an excited imagination, tainted with superstition. Evans knew that eggs presumed to come out of roosters caused panic because people used to believe that cock's eggs were used in witchcraft. Moreover, the same egg, according to an ancient folk belief, may produce a dreaded monster known as the basilisk or cockatrice, a malignant winged reptile with the head of a cock and the tail of a serpent.
Yeah, you'd hate to find one of those in your chicken coop, wouldn't you?
No, absolutely.
You're out there, it's 4:30 in the morning.
You're more likely to find one of them on Tinder.
Huh?
which destroyed men and things by its breath and its glance. Also, you're going to want to put gloves on while handing a cockatrice because it will turn you to stone. Watch your step. Do not trip. Careful while wearing a blindfold. And so on. I don't know if you know any more net hack facts about cockatrices, Ben.
No, I'm not intimately familiar with net hack, I'm afraid.
No. Me either.
I played, net hack was that, it wasn't a roguelike, was it? It was a text one? Was it a mud?
Yeah, it was a text, it was a text one. It was the first roguelike that we really discuss apart from Rogue.
Oh, see, I mostly played Angband.
Oh. That's even worse.
Oh, well.
Somehow nerdier. I still enjoy a game of Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup. Not bad.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's good. It's pretty easy to get into. Check out free game Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup. No cockatrices in it, though. Regarding the superstition as absurd, Evans considered it equally absurd to expect eggs from roosters. So that's that.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
All right. Thomas Hogg was a servant from New Haven Colony.
Uh-huh. Sorry, that name again?
Thomas Hogg.
Yep. Tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Where the one-eyed George Spencer confessed to sodomy after a sow gave birth to a deformed one-eyed piglet, which led to his execution in April of 1642.
Huh.
So.
Yeah.
So sodomy here refers to not just sodomy is non-procreative sex in this sense of the word.
Yeah.
So sex with an animal, sodomy. And that's going to be useful to all of our listeners, possibly on the stand. Like Spencer, Hogg did not enjoy a good reputation. He was considered a liar and a thief, and his appearance offended his neighbours. Women of various social positions, including a slave woman named Lucretia, reported his indecency as he allowed his quote-unquote filthy nakedness, in brackets penis and scrotum, to show through his breeches.
We just got a little hole there?
Really, the whole hog.
Oh, no.
Whole hog through the hog hole. Hog, who suffered from a painful inguinal hernia, it does sound painful, argued that his indecency was not intentional. 5 years after Spencer's execution, Hogg was implicated in, quote, quote, the most interesting buggery case ever. Now, that is an interesting buggery case.
And possibly the most interesting I've ever seen.
Hey, check out this buggery case that just came across my desk. he was already awaiting trial for theft, dishonesty, and indecent exposure when he was brought up on charges of bestiality after a sow gave birth to two piglets that resembled him.
How much do you reckon? How strongly?
I ideally want to know. I want like a court sketch. Alas. Hogg's mistress, Mrs. Lamberton, offensive to the eyes, still enjoys a married mistress, who was also a huge narc, apparently, because she found the birth to be a sign from God and told the authorities that one of the quote-unquote monsters had, quote, a fair and white-skinned and head as Thomas Hogg is, end quote. And the other, quote, a head like a child's and one eye like him, the bigger on the right side, as if God would describe the party with the description of the instrument of bestiality, end quote. So really going to town on old mate Hogg.
Oh.
Well, I've enjoyed sleeping with you outside the sanctity of marriage, but that pig kind of looks like you and the other one has an eye bigger. As if someone fucked that pig, so I'm gonna do you in.
We had a lovely time together, but holy fuck, it's time for you to go down.
It's time for pig trial. Theophilus Eaton.
Theophilus
Eaton.
Huh.
Kind of what we were doing here if I was also eating lunch during this process or something.
Are you eating lunch?
No, sadly not. I'm already finished my... I had a little steak sandwich.
Oh, God, that for sounds lunch. Good. You're just tantalizing me with a sandwich now.
Mm.
A lot of sandwich talk this afternoon.
Governor of the colony and his deputy brought Hogg to a barnyard where the crime was supposed to have taken place. They ordered him to scratch the sow under her ear, after which, quote, there appeared a working of lust in the sow, insomuch that she powered out seed before them, end quote. Can I give that to you one more time?
Yes, I would love it if you did, very much.
Quote, there appeared a working of lust in the sow, insomuch that she powered out seed before them, end quote.
Now, I don't want to get caught up on farm animal terminology here. Sow? Yeah. This is a lady pig.
Mm-hmm. Seed.
Yeah. What are we saying
here? Empowering it out. Caitlin and I had this discussion.
You were so perplexed by the sentence that you had to run it by your lovely wife.
Yeah, fact checker of the show.
Yeah.
And we've come back with an inconclusive on that one. Our first Theophile's inconclusive.
Any theories?
So, obviously, there's two. One being that she's, like, spat out a bunch of seed.
Mm-hmm.
Or she's, like, gone for a little, like, roll-up in the seed tray or something out of excitement.
Yep.
Yep. And two, a big old bunch of cum.
Yep. Those are the options. Let us know if you've got a theory about this.
Yeah. Seed or cum.
Seed or cum.
To Andrew at Punta Vista.
And simply write, we want a one-word response.
Yeah, just, so to subject Andrew, title.
Seed.
Seed or cum, question mark, and then your answer.
And, yep, that's mailbag at puntavista.com, but care of Andrew.
So, yeah, very important, C-O, Andrew, and then seed or cum in there. Hogg was then ordered to scratch another sow, but she was not stimulated. You gotta listen to what they want. You gotta follow their cues.
They will tell you.
They'll tell you. The governor and deputy governor were frustrated that despite their experiment, very...
so, bringing the scientific method to bear on this.
Mm-hmm. Hogg denied the charges. Ah, heck. Well, we... We hit him with both cannons.
I didn't fuck no pig.
I didn't do it.
And we were stuck.
Without the confession, the impudent liar could not be hanged. You meet two impudent liars on the road to Rome. One of them fucked a pig. Because the requirement of two witnesses could not be met. Instead, he was convicted of lying and stealing, for which he was severely whipped and incarcerated. While imprisoned... Hogg was kept on, quote, a mean diet and hard labor that his lusts not be fed.
So we don't want him to have excess energy in his body because he might want to fuck a pig.
We don't want him on any of those pig fucking foods like oats.
It's slightly too many calories and now he's just walking around trying to fuck everything.
That's how it happens. The situation left a permanent mark on capital punishment jurisprudence. Hogg appears again in the court records in 1648 when he was admonished for failing to appear for guard duty. Thomas Hogg innocent. That's all I have to say.
The Thomas Hogg Innocence Project.
And finally, the final case I have for you today. Jacques Ferron was a Frenchman who was tried and hanged in 1750 for copulation with a jenny, which is a female donkey. The trial took place in the commune of Vannes, and Ferron was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. In cases such as these, it was usual that the animal would also be sentenced to death, but in this case, the she-ass was acquitted. The court decided that the animal was a victim and had not participated of her own free will.
Oh, no.
A document dated 19th September 1750 was submitted to the court on behalf of the she-ass, that attested to the virtuous nature of the animal.
They're getting weird with it. I mean, all of this is weird, obviously, but like, okay. Maybe I feel like a rational thing is to be like, look, it's not like they're in love. You know, this man overpowered that donkey or whatever, but to instead be like, no, this is a donkey of incredible character. You're being a creep at this point.
People were just strange. They're just weird brains. Signed by the parish priest and other principal residents of the commune, it proclaimed that, quote, they were willing to bear witness that she is in word and deed and in all of her habits of life a most honest creature. So you said at the beginning that there was no justice for animals, but in this case, justice for whoever this donkey was. I don't give her a name.
I mean, that's quite nice.
It is nice. She lived to eat some seed, some chaff.
Whatever it is that they do.
Kick a teenager in the spine.
Walk in circles, powering the mills from Age of Empires 2. Until you get to the age where it switches to a windmill.
Yeah, those are all the things donkeys do.
Yep, that's my full understanding of the life of a donkey.
Well, thank you for listening to some words on animal trials, Ben.
Oh, thank you so much for finding those words. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've learned a lot today.
I feel like we've all learned a lot.
What's the lesson here? Yeah, between these two stories, what's the intersection? What's the moral?
If you have sex with an animal, just say you didn't do it.
And if you let loose a turd inside any sort of space vehicle, just say you didn't do it.
You didn't do it.
Oh, whose turd is this? Can't be mine. Texture's wrong.
Whose combination of sow and monster with one weird eye and looks a lot like me is this? Simply not mine.
This demon pig that has my face. I had nothing to do with it. Never it fucked a pig me. In my life.
Something well, that I think just the two of us on the podcast can say here and now. I've never fucked a pig in my life.
I've never fucked a pig in my life. And I wouldn't even dream of speaking for Andrew or Lucy.
No.
They have their own voices and we must
uplift them. Don't want to put words in their mouths really give them the right of refusal or response.
No. You know what? Let's just, for the sake of being safe, say that they both have fucked a pig.
They might have. They definitely did.
There's a pretty good chance both of them have fucked a pig before. Well, thanks for listening. This has been Bonavista. We'll catch you again on another episode.
Bye.